Shalom. Welcome to another episode of Inspiration from Zion. I'm Jonathan Feldstein, and I have the privilege of being your host, coming to you from the Judean Mountains here in Israel. I like to refer to it as the original Bible Belt. Inspiration from Zion is a program of the Genesis 1-2-3 Foundation, whose mission is to build bridges between Jews and Christians with Israel in ways that are new, unique, and meaningful. I pray that you will find this all of those. Through this program, we're excited to connect you to people and stories in and relating to Israel to give you a window to look through, experiencing aspects of life here that you might not otherwise know about. We want this to be interactive, so please be in touch at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com and send along any questions about any topic anytime. Or you can reach out to us at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com or at genesis123.co and follow and like Inspiration from Zion on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Stay tuned until the end, where we're also going to share an exciting opportunity. And please feel free to share this with others who will also find it of interest. Today, we're doing something unique on multiple levels. Biggest panel I've ever had. I hope everyone will be able to stay with, and I will introduce everyone shortly. We also are waiting for a couple of people to join by way of backup, because myself and all of the five panelists are here in Israel, and unlike any other time I've had a webinar and podcast recording that we've done, there's a reasonable possibility that we could all at one moment be sent to our bomb shelters. So I'm hoping that we will have a couple of the understudies who we've designated. I also have my phone on here to my left, looking for instructions from Homefront Command. Elliot's phone is on. I'm sure probably all of us have that as well. And it's possible that some or all of us at any moment may be sent to the bomb shelter, in which case we're going to improvise and hope that our guests who will come on as to conclude the program will also be able to continue the conversation and moderate. We're going to try and cover a lot of questions, a lot of topics, with brevity on all of them in as much time as possible. Today's topic, and I'm, you know, every day it's changing. So it's what we're going to be discussing today is unique from what we would have discussed yesterday, and will be different already from what we might be discussing tomorrow. The top 10 things that you need to know about the war with Iran. Okay, some of them have been consistent, and we're going to go through what those are. I invite the people joining live to use the Q&A feature to send any questions you have, and I'll do my best to moderate. For those who have not yet been, everyone already is a veteran. Some people call it the A-Team. Since my name is Jonathan, I'm calling it the J-Team. And I'm very excited in alphabetical order to introduce and welcome back Major Elliot Chodoff, a 35-year-old military, veteran, and political and military analyst specializing in the Middle East and the global war on terror. He's a respected speaker, a frequently published commentator in a wide range of media and journals. Nicole Jensesian is a respected American-born journalist living in Jerusalem for two decades, whose writing has appeared widely around the world, and who is host of the Inside Scoop Jerusalem, and this week, I know, especially, has been all over the country doing some amazing reporting, and I'm looking forward to hearing about that. Rolene Marx is also a widely respected international journalist and broadcaster and voluntary head of public diplomacy for World Wizo. Chris Mitchell, joining us from the studio at CBN here in Jerusalem, has lived here in Jerusalem for nearly 25 years as the bureau chief for CBN News, providing daily updates with unique insight and integrity to millions of Christians all over the world. But I wrote Christians, I have to say, I can't tell you, Chris, when you were at my daughter's wedding a couple of weeks ago, this week, how many people said, oh, is that Chris Mitchell, among my Jewish friends? So they were real excited. I think you were the most famous person there. And Barry Shaw is the public diplomacy associate at the Israel Institute for Strategic Studies and host of an interview and news program called The View from Israel. He's authored several books, including Fighting Hamas, BDS and Anti-Semitism as a Warning to the West for Abandoning Its Judeo-Christian Values. Goodness gracious, Barry, Elliot, Nicole, Rolene, and Chris, welcome back. It's really wonderful to have you again on Inspiration from Zion for this important conversation.
Got it.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, really?
No way.
Yep,
me too.
How long? This is the general warning. It says extreme, but it's not giving out the areas that need to go into this. It's an unmanned warning.
All right, well, then I'm going to wait till my wife pounds on the door. Let's see if we can begin here. And for those who are joining and we don't have understudies yet, then please just stay tuned. We're going to be doing our best to come back. Folks.
Put it on pause and then I release the
box. Well, no, because
as long as I can, but yeah.
But this is crazy. Okay, you folks are getting a real live experience about what I'm,
I'm getting one now. Yeah.
You are, Chris, because if you're getting it, I'm getting it. And I didn't get it yet.
Getting it. I'm just getting it on myself.
The extreme warning, but it's not giving the areas. I don't know if
I have the areas. Dan, Sharon, Lachish, Hashvila, Yarkon.
Okay. My wife hasn't dragged me out of here, so I've been...
let's see how we can go and how many of us stay on. Or not.
Well, this is one of the top 10 things in Israel right now.
It sure is. It sure is.
This is life.
Wow. So it's kind of funny just to talk about pro forma stuff. But what we're seeing is now the actual live way that we live here in Israel. 10 plus million of us who have been living like this now. We're in day 5 of this situation since Friday. I don't know. A battle on the front.
We should all talk fast.
Well, we'll talk fast. So what I'd like to begin, because we're still seeing the consequences of, folks, what do you think the top 10 things or top 3 things that people need to know in terms of Israel's preparation and execution on Friday this past week? Go ahead, Barry.
You know, I heard that Michael Oreb was comparing what we went through to the Yom Kippur War. And the difference is, I think, that in the Yom Kippur War, it was actually over in 6 hours because our Air Force actually destroyed the Egyptian planes.
Well, the Six-Day War, not Yom Kippur. Six-Day.
The Six-Day War. Sorry. What did I say? Sorry. Six-Day War. Correct. Correct me. Six-Day War. Well, basically... that war was won basically in the first 6 hours because that was the time it took us to destroy the Egyptian players. After that, it was over. So the comparison with this is we completely outwitted Iran even more successfully than we had outwitted Hezbollah using our incredible intelligence capabilities and our air skills. And just like we decapitated Hezbollah with the beepers and everything, we also knew where their top generals were, where their top scientists slept. But it didn't stop the top level when we went layers deeper. In fact, we were seeing them in their bedrooms while they were sleeping.
Right. Now,
if people worldwide can get their heads around that, how for years and years that we had the intelligence, the Mossad had gathered that information and the targeting skills that went with that. And we decapitated their top generals, the deputy chief of staff, the third deputy chief of staff, all their major officers and everything within the first opening hours. That is absolutely incredible. And military experts, including my friend Colonel Richard Kemp, said he's never, ever seen anything like it in his life.
Right. Absolutely. Mm. Thank you. Thank you, Barry. While we're speaking, I just have invited Arlene Samuels to join. She's somewhere in the state of Georgia. And in the event that the 5 of us go offline, Arlene, I'm entrusting you and possibly one or two others to pick up the conversation or maintain the conversation in our absence. Elliot, you were about to add something to what Barry said.
Yes. First of all, I absolutely accept the parallel to the Six-Day War in terms of the opening.
Thank you.
The opening strike. But I think we need to look at this a little broader. This war didn't begin on June 13th. It began in 1979.
Yes.
And the intensive threat, I'll call it that way, from Iran in a physical sense, dates back well over 20 years. And we have been dealing with it in one way or another since then. And to wit, the Mossad operation.
That's my sirens, I'm out of here.
Okay, Barry, stay safe.
Okay, that's Netanyahu, sorry.
The Mossad operation didn't start a week ago or two. This is something that, has been running in Iran now for many, many years. Now, whether the actual the drone strike base goes back years or many months doesn't really matter. The point is that we've been preparing for this for quite a long time.
Do you have any idea?
We also had
I mean, Netanyahu has been going to the UN for several years saying it's tomorrow, it's tomorrow.
No, but I'm talking about the particular, the setting up of the drone system in Iran, whether it's months or years, the fact that we've been planning goes way back. But let's also keep in mind that we went into into this.
Do you think there'll be a moment?
Go ahead, Ellie.
Okay, we went into this with unanticipated preparation. In other words, Hezbollah, as Iran's second strike, was taken out unconnected to this, but taking it out paved the way toward it. Syria, the fall of Syria, unconnected to this, paves the way toward it. Taking out a good part of Iran's surface-to-air capability during the first two rounds over the past year, not part of the intentional prep for this, but paves the way to it. So by the time we get to June 13th, we're in much better shape than Israel was on June 5th, 1967. That doesn't mean that the results were a foregone conclusion, but we should understand that in many ways very different, although, again, to support what Barry said, those first hours were certainly decisive.
Thank you, Elliot. Nicole, Chris, you've spoken with a lot of people around the country since Friday in your own broadcasting. Anything that you want to add in terms of what you've gleaned from Israel's preparation for this?
Well, I'll let Nicole go first because we were down at Bet Yam together on Sunday at the site of that missile attack. Go ahead, Nicole.
So it's just been really interesting to see how people are responding to this, to this escalation. My thing that what I'm thinking, though, I understand what you guys are saying about the initial strike, but what I wanted to talk about is people are, you know, it looks like an amazing military feat, an amazing intelligence feat. I'm thinking, though, Hamas is not yet defeated and looked like an easier, and maybe one of you guys would speak to this, you're one of the military experts. Hamas should have been an easier defeat, and we're still in there. We're still in Gaza. Hezbollah was dramatic, you know, when how they took them out with the pagers and also were able to locate Nasrallah in his bunker. And so there have been amazing feats such as this, intelligence and military, but those are smaller enemies than Iran. And Iran is a sovereign nation with its own borders. It's not a militia in another land. It's a country with borders and with infrastructure. So I'm using caution, though. And looking at it, it is amazing. It's one for the books, probably, in terms of the fact that they had intelligence on the ground, literally, and maybe still do. But the question for me is what it actually looks like victory when you're still fighting wars on all the borders.
Well, let's come to that. That's a great question. Chris, do you want to add anything from what you've learned in terms of the preparation and execution?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's just an incredible military feat. We've been talking about this, reporting on this for about 20 years. I think it was 2002 when the Iranian nuclear program became out in public. I think it was actually the Iranian opposition group that announced that in Washington, D.C. at the National Press Club. So I'm sure, and it preceded that, the program itself. So here we are 23 years later. And I think this is a historic achievement of what the Mossad has been able to do. The precise operations, the intelligence is just extraordinary. That keeps going. I mean, Foreign Minister Guido Ansar said today he warned the next chief of staff of the Iranian army, be careful, because they've already eliminated two. One on the first day, the next one he was in his position for about 4 days. I think it's just astounding of what they've been able to achieve. This is 20 years in the making. You know, we've been talking about when is Israel going to attack Iran's nuclear facilities. I remember the late Pat Robertson would ask me that many times on the air, Pat, when are they going to attack? And here we are. And the way that it has, the operation has come together in so many disparate ways. You have maybe 200 planes leaving at the same time. You have air refueling. You have people on the ground. The coordination is just incredible. I've never heard of anything quite like this. I'm sure it'll be studied for years to come.
Yeah.
But it's go ahead.
I was going to say, I'd like to be alive in 50 years from now when all of it's out there.
Yeah.
It is historic that we're all living through it. Welcome back, Rolene. What you just experienced was something also we never could have scripted, I'd be prepared for. But there was an air raid siren across Israel from south of Hadera all the way to Tel Aviv and the airport and through Samaria. Not including Jerusalem and Northern Galilee. So that's why all of us were able to be staying on. Hopefully Barry will be back. Rolene, welcome back. Anything you want to, we were just talking about some of the uniqueness of Israel's preparedness for this in execution. Anything you want to add? You didn't hear what the others already had said. You're muted. We don't hear you.
Jonathan, this is Arlene. Can you hear me?
Yes, Arlene. Thanks.
You know, as a longtime follower of everything that is going on in Israel, in some ways, of course, we did not know about the secretive plans that were going on. Yet, when we all discovered it, it was no surprise. In many ways, because it was such detailed, excellent work. And to be able to have been in a covert planning stage for quite a while was really impressive, yet not surprising.
Thank you, Arlene. On October 7th, 2023, Israel and the Jewish people suffered a massacre and calamity of unprecedented proportion, the largest number of Jews killed in one day since the Holocaust. That this is even something that we even measure is harrowing. Since then, the Jewish people have never felt more alone, in Israel and around the world. It brings us back to when 6 million of us were murdered in the Holocaust, and few rose to protect us. However, those who did, the righteous among the nations, can never be forgotten. They serve as a beacon of light for us today and for future generations. Footsteps was born in the wake of this most recent calamity to give you the opportunity to walk in the footsteps of the righteous among the nations, the righteous Gentiles. Footsteps is a boutique travel experience with a personal touch. You will experience stories of the righteous among the nations, their descendants, of the Jews they saved, and the generations that came from them. Through this, you'll be inspired to follow in their footsteps to inspire new generations of righteous among the nations, especially today when so much of the world is embracing overt anti-Semitism. In a generation where standing up for Israel and the Jewish people is no longer something to be taken for granted, stories of the righteous among the nations call out to us, inspire us, and our models for today and for our next generations. Please join us and get more information at genesis123.co.
So I didn't hear what was said before, but I think that we have to mention that extraordinary operation by the Mossad, that three-tiered operation of infiltration into Iran. I mean, just what they accomplished with that. If you had to go to Hollywood with that as a script, they would laugh you out of the studio. That was really, really something absolutely mind-blowing. And it goes to show that, you know, Israel, we didn't get size. We often say that we are outnumbered by our enemies, by our detractors, but we certainly got chutzpah and we certainly got know-how. And I think it's also worth mentioning that a short while ago, we heard from CENTCOM saying that we were literally days away from that nuclear bomb. And you know, if we're talking about coordination, I think, and I'm sure you've said it, the coordination, not just with our pilots, our army, our air force, our navy, but also with our ally, the United States, working completely in partnership with us, with intelligence, that incredible ruse pulled off by President Trump and Prime Minister Netanyahu to make sure that the military targets, and I use that term deliberately because as some of you have seen, the Iranians are indiscriminately targeting Israeli civilians. You saw us all get up to leave to go to shelter, but we are targeting specific nuclear and military assets. Yeah. And I think all of this has demonstrated the clear difference between our allies and what we can only call the Axis, or the head of the nihilistic jihadist snake.
Excellent. Thank you. Rolene, you just mentioned the ruse. Elia, you wanted to comment on that before I pivot?
Not so much on the ruse. I wanted to relate to something that Nicole raised, because I think it's very important.
Okay.
In terms of what's happening still with Hamas, what happened with Hezbollah, and where we are with Iran. So first of all, paradoxically, and we've seen this not just here, but historically, regular high-level, high-grade regular militaries have a harder time defeating a guerrilla organization than they do another state. So even though Iran has a power, in many ways, power is the antithesis of resilience. Okay, so Hamas, while we've destroyed a good deal of its leadership and its military capability, and I think this is an important point, we've destroyed much of its power, and it has descended, if you will, into a resiliency stage of fighting in small groups, decentralized. Now, to be honest, Hamas of today is no longer really a threat to Israel. Will it still be one if we leave it to fester for another 5 or 10 years? The answer is yes. Okay. But what we're doing at the moment in Gaza is not removing the immediate threat. And of course, the hostages are their own sort of element to all of this. Okay. Hezbollah, different case, because Hezbollah is operating within a sovereign state, weak though it may be, but it's been weakened sufficiently that now the rest of Lebanon is sort of working against it, because the fear of Hezbollah was removed by our operations. Now, when we go to Iran, let's keep in mind, we're not trying to destroy Iran. And here, I would say the Air Force is uniquely suited to this kind of a mission. I'm an infantryman by... I don't run around in the field anymore, but
your old history.
But my home team is the infantry. So first of all, it pains me greatly to give the Air Force really high grades, but I have to. The truth is, and we know this once again historically, typically you cannot win a war from the air, as we learned the hard way in 2006, and others have learned in other cases. But the Air Force is uniquely suited to destroying things from the air. And that's exactly what the mission is in Iran. Ultimately destroy their nuclear capability. Along with that, their ballistic missile capability. And on the way to that, their surface-to-air systems, which we've already done, along with taking out leaders and infrastructure and that sort of thing. In other words, this is not a classic military defeat, but rather the destruction of assets in the hope that the Iranian people will wake up tomorrow morning, if not sooner, and say, let's get rid of these guys. Right. And then we have an ultimate victory that we brought about, but actually not accomplished ourselves. We've allowed somebody else to accomplish for us.
Well, but that's okay. And we're even seeing elements of that possibly.
Yes.
With the clans now being armed, fighting. So all of this is really good stuff. I did want to come back to the point that Rolene slipped in there in terms of the ruse, the deception. And there were multiple layers. I'm super interested to know, literally, what are the top one or two things that you've observed, whether we know they've been deceptive or we could just look at them now and put a big question mark and say, I wonder. Rolene, you brought up the issue of deception, and you specifically mentioned between Israel and the United States and Netanyahu and President Trump. Is there something you'd like to particularly drill down on in terms of what was one or two things that were most, if you will, remarkable? I want to leave some for the others.
I think I still go back to that Mossad operation inside of Iran, how they were able to infiltrate Iran. I can only imagine the kind of deception that occurred to get our agents in there, their ability to communicate with our Air Force to make sure that they had prepared adequately through that drone base, through them taking out the missile launchers, the anti-aircraft, and everything they did to lay the groundwork to prepare the sky to be wide open for our Air Force to come in. It's just something extraordinary. You know, just when you think the Mossad have outdone themselves with a BPA operation, along comes this three-tiered plan, and it's just... I think that the whole way that Rising Lion has been implemented, including that, will be studied for generations to come. Just absolutely mind-blowing.
Yeah. Chris, go ahead.
Yeah, Jonathan, you know, some of the ruse, I think, happened several weeks ago, and there was a question by many, is the U.S. and Israel on the same page? I think that partly began when the U.S. signed their own agreement with the Houthis to stop hitting any naval traffic or maritime traffic in the Red Sea. Then there were, you know, the sense of the Iranian negotiations. And was President Trump on the same page with Israel? Mixed messages about President Trump says we want a deal, but knowing that Israel certainly didn't think a deal would happen, or at least a good deal. So, but we interviewed just a week ago today in this very studio that I'm in right now, Ambassador Huckabee, and we asked him that question, is Israel and the U.S. on the same page? And he made the statement, which I think is has borne out true, that President Trump will not allow Iran to get a nuclear weapon. And if I can, Jonathan, just something that came out within the last hour or two. Maybe you've seen it or not on Truth Social. This is, can I read that?
Yeah, please do.
It's amazing. I mean, this is, you know, an amazing statement. So if you anybody wants to see it, it's on Truth Social. I got it from another source at first, and I thought, well, is this really true? So I got on Truth Social. So this is the message from Ambassador Mike Huckabee to President Trump. Mr. President, God spared you in Butler, PA, to be the most consequential president in a century, maybe ever. The decisions on your shoulders, I would not want to be made by anyone else. You have many voices speaking to you, sir, but there is only one, capital one voice, that matters, capital his voice. I am your appointed servant in this land, and I'm available to for you, but I do not want to get in your presence often because I trust your instincts. No president in my lifetime has been in a position like yours, not since Truman in 1945. I don't reach out to persuade you, only to encourage you. I believe you will hear from heaven, and that voice is far more important than mine or anyone else's. You sent me to Israel to be your eyes, ears, and voice, and to make sure our flag flies above our embassy. My job is to be the last one to leave. I will not abandon this post. Our flag will not come down. You did not seek this moment. This moment sought you. Wow. It is my honor to serve you. Signed, Mike Huckabee. To me, that's just such a profound message to the president that obviously the president wanted to take public. This is a key time. So the president left the G7 meeting. He's at the White House. I haven't heard anything of what they decided. Does this mean the U.S. will join in a very dramatic way? Israel, will it come to hit Fordow, which seems to be the key nuclear facility? But this, I think Mike Huckabee really struck such a tone that really God is, we need to see God during this time.
It's great. Thank you. It's great that you interjected that, Chris, and also in the context, if you will, in terms of the ruse, because one of the things that I've been wondering, had been wondering about, is I felt bad for Ambassador Huckabee for a little while, because it felt that Trump wasn't really 100% on the same page with us. And arguably, I mean, whether he's the most pro-Israel U.S. ambassador, that can be debated, and there's a short list that his name can certainly be included in. But where the root of his support for Israel is in his faith, and I've been sitting here watching what's going on up until last Friday, thinking, wow, the ambassadors may be a little uncomfortable with this. So I'm wondering, not necessarily that we can answer it now, whether he was also part of this greater deception. Nicole, you raise your eyes there. What do you think? What's the greatest point of deception that we need to point out here?
I you know, the funny thing is, again, I feel like I have more questions than answers, because all of what you have said, and actually we should, you know, hear, I would agree with all of you probably in the end, because I'm in hindsight, you look back. And we, especially as journalists, have been jerked back and forth, you know, with, you know, one way and then the other way. And then, you know, and it's really a difficult situation. You have different, even people within the same government giving different responses or different narratives. So you ultimately never know exactly which one is the truth. And especially if you watch the Israeli news, I feel like you're just in that cycle and it's even more dramatized. So, I look back and I remember even on Thursday, I may have also been victim of the ruse, because I was thinking it's not going to happen. And it happened that night. So I would say that the groundwork was laid very cleverly, and it has to be more than just it was Israel. But like you're all saying, bringing up the talks with the U.S., And those talks, I wonder if that's the biggest ruse of all, that they went to Rome and Oman.
Well, when I was a speaker in Maryland last month, I was very stressed, honestly. And one of the greatest sense of comfort I got is from a friend who was chair of the Maryland National Day of Prayer that hosted me. And he said, no, he thinks that Trump is using this whole negotiation thing to run out the clock in those 60 days. And by the way, boom, on day 61 is when we saw the trigger pull, and move, and giving time to move all the ordnance and everything in place. And that wasn't a terribly incorrect observation. Even to the point that, I don't know, did his son ultimately get married, Netanyahu's son, this week, or is he getting married? Negotiation was a ruse, but Barry, you raise your hand. What's the biggest deception that you've perceived, whether it's something that we know or something that we're still going to question and look for in the coming weeks and months?
It's out there, and I'm very grateful for Chris for telling us about Ambassador Huckabee's message to President Trump, and it's very, very timely, because I'm in the middle of preparing an Substack article. I've got some notes ahead of me, because the problem we have here, there are some, let's call them neocons, even potentially in the Trump White House, that hold that actually it's Israel that's the destabilizing force in the Middle East, and thus a nuclear bomb in the hands of the Iran terror regime will stabilize the region. And we can mention here, of course, Tucker Carlson, who has been an outspoken critic.
Right.
Barry,
I just want to keep it on. Forget Tucker; he's not our topic right now. I'd like to focus on what are the deceptions? I mean, he's deceived, but not part of the deception.
But what I'm coming to, and part of my article in Substack will include this, I name names of people who have influential positions within the White House itself who are persuading and pressuring. And one person in particular is, in fact, one of the person that recruits the personnel into the White House, the staffers, some of the major staffers. And those are coming from the neocon sort of, not the neocon, but let's say the anti-Israel lobby within the White House. And these people are having arguments within themselves. For instance, a guy called Gore, who is the head of personnel, who is now in conflict with Stephen Miller, for instance. So there are these things going on behind the scenes.
There are things going on, but what we saw in terms of, to some degree, and I don't know if it was 100% or 80%, and Elliot, I'm going to give you the floor, in terms of the deception, the perception that Israel and the U.S. were not in sync. There were planned, today's Tuesday, as we speak, there was supposed to be another quote-unquote negotiation in Oman, I think, or wherever they were supposed to have it. That may have also been part of the deception, and President Trump the day before saying that they're being giving one last chance. But there may be people who are whispering loudly in the president's ear, but right now it seems like he's on task. Elliot, do you have any observations in terms of the one deception that we haven't discussed yet or emphasized, the one that is the biggest?
I think that on the contrary, there wasn't one deception. There was a network of deceptions, which in fact are much more effective, because if there's a single one and it's caught or it's overturned, you've lost it. I think that, first of all, the negotiations ended up as part of the deception. It's my opinion that Trump went into the negotiations from a win-win position, saying to himself, either I get a deal or I get them. Mm-hmm. And, I like Godfather analogies. He reached a point along the way where he said, nobody can reason with these people. And he didn't come out and say it publicly, but he came to that conclusion. He left it open. He told them, come, he gave them the warning, take the deal now. And here I have to say something else. And with all honestly due respect to President Trump, we all know that the man is erratic, and that was part of the deception, not intentional, but it, in other words, you can't take his immediate word at face value, because tomorrow he can say something else. And again, this is more analysis than criticism. And among us, let's be serious. It makes our work that much more difficult as analysts, as reporters, because we don't know. We can't follow it, but neither could the Iranians. Mm. Now, at the point where he and Netanyahu came to whatever agreement they came to, all they really needed to do was keep doing what they were doing. Because even when the Times came out with its report that Israel is planning an attack at any moment, Trump said, let's let the diplomacy work. I don't know if he meant it or not. But he also didn't care. And here I want to sort of close this with something else that's very important, not exclusively Trumpist, but very much so also Trumpist. Patton used to say that success has many fathers, failure is a lonely orphan. Trump loves success. And the success of the opening of Thursday night into Friday certainly helped turn around to the point of Trump saying, you know what, I was part of this too.
Where it's a very good call, Elliot. That's a very good call.
Okay.
If, as we were waking up at 3 o'clock in the middle of the night between Thursday and Friday with Israeli home front command ready to have as many as 4,000 casualties on our end, he might not have been so excited about the operation.
He might have distanced, that's right. He might have distanced himself.
Observation. Excellent. Mm. Excellent.
This year, you can join Christian leaders from around the world who are lining up to participate in Root and Branch, the newest hands-on, meaningful, and incredibly tangible way for Christians to make a personal connection to Israel, the Israeli people, and to be a blessing to the people and nation which is still suffering from the trauma of a horrific terrorist attack and war. Root and Branch offers unique comfort and a vision of peace, with tangible material benefits to Israelis who have suffered the trauma of war, specifically in and around the Gaza border area. Root and Branch is a unique agricultural pilgrimage. You will harvest wild olive trees in communities along the Gaza border that were devastated by the October 7, 2023 terrorist attack and massacre. In these communities and elsewhere, we will plant deep and lasting roots among Israelis of all backgrounds, making Root and Branch all the more innovative. Since the war began, more than $50 million in crops have been saved by volunteers. Root and Branch is the first such initiative to harvest olives. Proceeds from the olive oil that's being made will directly benefit these devastated communities, making Root and Branch a critical and significant project to bless Israel economically and spiritually in multiple ways. Root and Branch is a partnership between the Genesis 123 Foundation and NewPersia.org. For information, videos, and media about the experience, dates, pricing, and how you can register, please visit rootandbranchisrael.com.
Anyone?
I'll say the leadership. They kind of hit the leadership right away, and they keep hitting it. In terms of physical, I think the most important one maybe so far is Natanz, but the Fordow is the big one, I think, coming up. But I would say the leadership right away, they're not only deceived, they're not only sleeping, literally, but they're taking away the top leadership. It's like Hassan Nasrallah and the beepers on steroids. It was brilliant.
Chris, I want to applaud you. You've been living in Israel long enough that you gave a very Jewish answer. I asked for one and you said the leadership and Natanz. But good for you. Thank you. Excellent. Welcome. Who else? Rolene, you're unmuted. You want to, what's the top target that we hit?
I agree. I think the leadership definitely is the top target, because nothing gets done or fired without the command of the leadership. And I think what we are seeing are the shortest military careers in replacement officials. I think their career time is even shorter than that of Hezbollah. But I think all eyes are going to be on two targets. Fordow, for sure. That's an imperative. And whether or not, and I know that the Prime Minister said all options are on the table, the Ayatollah al-Khamenei, because I think with that hit, that crumbles the brutal Iranian regime. But also, just another point, and I don't know if anybody has touched on this, is Syria's role. And apparently Syria giving the permission for Israel to use their airspace to fly to Iran, which I found out today listening to a podcast with the brilliant Jonathan Conricus, and that kind of took me by surprise. I don't think we ever thought you would see a day where Syria would say, you know what, count us out, Iran, we're not interested, and Israel, here's our airspace, get it done.
I had not heard that report. That is remarkable, because Syria could have just stayed quiet if, in fact, they gave permission publicly. That's remarkable, Nicole.
Yes, I heard an analyst comment on this a couple of days ago, like, we needed your permission. Like, Julani, really? Thank you so much. You know, that's because Julani put out a statement that Israel can, we've given Israel permission to use our airspace, and like, who asked you? We would have done it anyway, you know. Anyways, that.
But thank you.
But thanks anyway. He's with the big boys now, so you know.
Yeah.
It's just really a tough question to answer, and I think you know the biggest target is yet to come, and Netanyahu also said that I don't want to name names. the supreme leader. But I also think with this, Israel also in some ways targeted positively the hearts of the Iranian people. And I think that's something that will, you know, maybe we don't get to this now. Maybe you want to get to that in another question. But I think it's a very important part of the story is how Israel views Iran as an enemy, so do the very people of that nation view their government as the enemy. So I think it's a very such a different type of war than I think we're used to. It's not the traditional Russia versus Ukraine's with where versus Ukraine, where Ukrainians and Russians are patriotically against each other. You know, I think in this case, you have an element of the people cheering on Israel, which is not normal for most wars.
I heard that during the Falkland Islands War, that the sheep in the Falkland Islands were very outspoken against their being occupied by Argentina. Barry, what do you think is the biggest target that was hit?
First of all, as an ex-Brit, I don't like your expression of what the Brits did in the Falkland Islands. But no, I mean,
you fit, my friend.
More seriously, I mean, I am in contact with a number of Iranian refugees, when you call them, living in Britain and America, and the feedback I'm getting from those is that if Israel would destroy both the military and the police headquarters within around Tehran, together with the parliament building and everything, that would encourage the people of Iran to actually rise up, certainly starting in Tehran. And once they rise up, the message will go out, and there's plenty of people in the other major towns. Don't forget that Iran, we think that Iran is one country. But quite frankly, it's made up of various sects. Elliot can give us an explanation of this. And they're just waiting for the moment that they have enough courage to rise up. The one thing I told please don't expect to see Israeli tanks rumbling across the main streets in Tehran. There comes a point if you want to do it, this could be the time, but you're going to have to do it because we're not in it. We would love to be in it for regime change, but even we don't want to be in a position where we have to impose or whatever, impose something in place of. Well, we're doing the work for our own self-preservation. What comes next is up to you.
Okay, well said. Elliot, you were cited. Do you want to, I know we're off topic, but I kind of expected that.
Way off. Look, Iran... It's an entire elect. I'm not going to go into it, but Iran, as Barry pointed out, is a mosaic of many different ethnic groups, religious as well as regional tribal. So the idea, speaking of Iran as a monolith, is certainly a social monolith, is problematic. The regime has held control through a variety of means, including divide and conquer. In other words, the fact that it's a mosaic works can cut in multiple directions. And fear, of course, has been part of it as well. I'm going to throw in one of Eliot's iron laws on this. And I agree, Barry, this is something that either, and I mentioned myself earlier, this is something they're going to have to do, not something that we're going to do for them. But one of Eliot's iron laws in uprisings, revolutions, and the like goes very simply like this. Uprisings and revolutions succeed when the rebels have more people willing to die than the regime is willing to kill.
There you go. You know, go ahead. I want to ask you something after.
Okay. Where we are right now is that we are lowering the number they can kill because we're taking out a good deal of their capability, both command, military, and whatever. But nonetheless, if there's going to be an uprising, people will die. And the question is, do the rebels have the will to lose the number of people they're going to lose in order to overthrow the regime? That's the question I don't have the answer to, and I don't think anybody else does. We're going to have to wait and see on that.
Right. And a concern, and maybe it's also part of the ruse or one of the reasons that President Trump flew back to the U.S. is he keeps talking about Iran making a deal again and again. And I've been publishing and speaking on this thing. The Iranians, this, you know, there's an hourglass. We don't know how long that they have to right. oust their own Islamic regime. And we do know that probably most of them want it. But then there's a question of what price are they willing to risk? And we don't know those. Go ahead, Chris.
No, I was going to say, you know, we've seen 2009, the Green Revolution, when President Obama had his moment to say, to stand with them. He didn't. And then we've seen the protests after 2023 and 2022 with Mashar Amini, those protests. To your point, Elliot, I think it's great that the regime right now is the bar is being lowered of the amount of people they can actually kill. I'm so hopeful now more than any of the other protests that actually could this be the time. Certainly the sentiment is there, and I would expect based on the other protests the courage and their willingness to put their lives on the line. Just curious, Jonathan, have you been in touch with Marzeh, our Iranian?
I have been, and Nicole had her on her podcast, I think earlier this week, right? I've been in touch, and I know she has an article coming out with kind of an overview of some historic things, the Islamic Revolution, and what needs to happen now, and obviously. Given her spending 9 months in Evin prison during that 2009 Green Revolution and all of the persecution that she saw here, she's I think more eager than any of us to see the Ayatollah dragged out and strung up wherever. It's sort of biblically like what we saw with Haman. Let him be hung in the same tree that he's prepared for all of us. Which actually is a great segue. What's the biggest surprise from the Iranian response? Anybody? What we've seen and what we haven't seen? Elliot?
I haven't been surprised.
Okay.
The Iranian response is a function of its power. Its power was weaker going into this and with Hezbollah out of the picture, much weaker than what had been anticipated over the years. And I've lectured on the subject for decades. The situation that we went into this with on June 13th is very different from anything any of us anticipated even a year ago. So having reached that point, not surprised, very, very gratified, very satisfied that both the Mossad, the Air Force, will add to that the all the intelligence services that operated, performed as well as they did, beyond expectations, to some extent, only because of a human factor. And, you know, let me just throw this out there. I don't know if there have been any losses. We haven't received anything, but if they are, they've been very, very low. That's a credit not only to the pilots.
Let's not discount the...
I'm talking about the military. By the way, I'll come back to the civilian in a moment. But military losses, very low, if any. None have been reported. But that's a credit not only to the pilots. It's a credit to the air controllers, to the ground crews. In other words, getting a combat aircraft from here to there and back, leaving the opposition for a moment, in and of itself is semi-miraculous. So the whole system... All of us who are in Israel know this. To say the whole system is working the way it's supposed to work is a miracle in its own right.
Yep.
Okay.
And that nobody actually spilled the beans for the last 1 year.
That's right. Okay. So all of that, as I said, semi-miraculous. Once we got past the first 12 to 24 hours, for me, there have been no surprises. The Iranian response in terms of the missile attacks was not a surprise. And with all of the tragedy involved in the losses, and I don't belittle them, much lower than we anticipated going into this, certainly in the early planning stages of over a year ago, but I would say even now, the civil defense is working.
1% of the lowest expectation.
Yes. Mm. Okay. The interceptors are working. By the way, I have to say this because I'm seeing a lot of this out there, and I don't know how many of you are technically savvy on this. The Iron Dome is not being overwhelmed. The Iron Dome is not used against ballistic missiles.
Correct.
It's an anti-rocket system. It's not the only time Iron Dome is being used now is to take out large fragments of missiles after they've been intercepted.
Mm.
Right.
In other words, the Iron Dome is being fired at those big pipes.
Right.
The system, the Arrow, the Patriot, and the THAAD system is 90 to 95% effective theoretically. It's actually been more effective than its theoretical effectiveness.
Yep.
So interesting.
Nicole?
Can I ask something here, Jonathan?
Sure, Baron.
You asked us for surprises. I would like to add a disappointment. Okay? And I'm doing this particularly. I was on a radio show yesterday in Australia, and I was referring to the fact that Israel had given information of how Iran was in default of their IAEA obligations even before the IAEA met in Geneva and actually came up with a resolution confirming what we said, in that, in fact, they said that Iran is in serious breach of their commitment.
Why are you disappointed in that? Because Israel said it before it was announced?
I'm not disappointed with that. What I was saying in Australia is what I've been disappointed with, and I'm not surprised because I've been contesting this since the 8th of October, has been the behavior of the Western governments who sat on that committee and voted for it. And you know what they didn't do? They didn't bring Iran to the United Nations Security Council at criminal behavior.
Barry, I want to just pause that for a minute, because that's exactly the thought I wanted to go to next. But I just wanted to ask the others, so we don't go off that topic, in terms of if Nicole, Rolene, Chris, is there anything that you observe that surprises you in terms of the Iranian response? Elliot said no, that's the best they could do. Any other response on that? Then we'll come back to what Barry was saying.
The restoration of Jewish sovereignty in the land of Israel was an earth-shattering event. For Christians, it was a confirmation that God always keeps his covenantal promises. Today, we are blessed to see God's fingerprints in the modern miracle of the land of Israel playing out in our lives among the people and in the state of Israel. This year, on the occasion of Israel's 75th anniversary, the Genesis 123 Foundation has been privileged to bring together 75 Christian leaders from around the world to lend their unique voices, sharing their personal faith experiences relating to Israel and their in-depth insight into Israel's history and spiritual significance, creating an historical, one-of-a-kind, high-end coffee table book, Israel the Miracle. Israel the Miracle's stunning imagery will fill your home with the hope of fulfilled promises and conversations about Israel. It's a perfect gift to anyone for any occasion, and most of all, to yourself. You'll also be a blessing to Israel, knowing that the proceeds will go to bless Israelis of all backgrounds. Be a part of Israel the Miracle and bring the land, the people, and the state of Israel into your heart and into your home. Visit israelthemiracle.com to get your limited edition copy today.
I would say my surprise would be not that they retaliated, but that the limit, the way the IDF has been to limit their response by hitting the ballistic missile launchers and the ballistic missiles themselves. I mean, it could have been far greater, far worse here.
Indeed. Nicole?
Yeah, for me, the biggest surprise is the Houthis. I seriously expected that after the last couple of weeks of escalated missile attacks launched by the Houthis, I seriously expected that they would have joined the fray even before Hezbollah, which also hasn't. But I'm surprised that they are not sending as many missiles or as frequently as I felt that they were in the weeks leading up to this attack.
Excellent. Nolene, you had raised your hand. What's your biggest surprise?
I'm actually grateful for Elliot's analysis, because one of the concerns that I had, and maybe it's just, you know, years and years of distrust with the Iranians, is that I hope they don't have some kind of surprise we don't know about in store for us. That was that has been a concern for me. But I think a surprise that we're not talking about is the cohesiveness of the Israeli messaging around this whole campaign. I think that our messaging to media, our messaging to the international community, our preparedness for this has been absolutely incredible. And I think lessons need to be drawn from that, that when we do go into other military campaigns or operations, or when we encounter challenges, to use this as a model of it can be done. It absolutely can be done. It has been absolutely on point and cohesive.
So the same way the Air Force acted as close to perfect as possible, we're seeing the same in terms of the public diplomacy and the messaging. And we need to analyze that and learn from it and follow suit in future rounds. And there will be. You mentioned international. Go ahead.
Paul actually touched on this. I think she said Netanyahu's messaging to the Iranian people has been so consistent and so clear. And that has been backed up by anybody who is media facing about how we are supportive of the Iranian people. And I think that is making a huge difference.
Mm. Excellent. Thank you. You know what? I'm learning so much from all of you, because I have to be honest, yeah, I've been overwhelmed by all of the information and I've been obsessed with it. But there's only one TV channel I can watch at a time. And there's only a certain number of times that I can scroll through all the internet while I'm doing that. So thank you all for this. Let's, Rolene, you mentioned international community. I cut Barry off when he was talking about his disappointment with the Western members of the IAEA. And I wanted to ask, what are we seeing or surprised from, good or bad, in terms of the world, the West, the Arab world, the developing nations? I'm curious to any observations from you, in any order.
I can tell you that I've been people from Asia who have been, in any case, before pro-Israel, also in Africa, are absolutely virtually all inspired by the way that we have taken on Iran after we took on and defeated Hezbollah, more or less tamped down the Houthis and finishing off with Hamas. And they are looking at Israel through different eyes. We are the strong lion in the Middle East. And quite frankly, I'm disappointed, should I say, by some of what we call the moderate Arab states in the Middle East. I'm talking of some of those in the Abraham Accords. I'm also referring here to Saudi Arabia, because we've taken the threat of Iran off their necks as well. And I haven't heard one word of gratitude from these nations.
Ah, well, that's an interesting observation. I was speaking with somebody about that in the blur of the last number of days, and I'm thinking that the fact that they're not as public in criticizing Israel is already an achievement. Elliot, I know you have to go. I want to pivot to you, any observation in terms of the world, but then I'm going to give you the last word on where does this go? How does this end?
Okay, first of all, I'm not surprised. I hold the world in very low esteem, and so I'm not surprised. You know, optimists are never pleasantly surprised. So I'm not an optimist, but I think Barry, to your point, I think the close in, what we'll call the moderate Arab regimes, are still going to sit on the fence until it's over, because in this neighborhood, you don't bet on the wrong horse. And as Yogi Berra famously said, it ain't over till it's over. So that, by the way, that's everyone, as far as that goes.
Not everyone's an American who understands the baseball analogy. or who knows who Yogi Berra is, but we'll go with it.
But in any event, it ain't over till it's over.
Good.
And as far as Europe and the rest, once again, I hold them all in very low esteem, for a whole bunch of reasons, historical as well as current demographic. And I think you all know what I'm talking about. So, there's going to be a lot of wait and see. I think that the fact that there has been muted criticism of Israel on this, and we'll see how long that check is good for. But up until now, at least, is an indicator of at least the fact that much of the world sees the Iranian threat as existential to themselves as well, and they're more than happy for us to do their dirty work. And then when it's all over, they can condemn us in the Security Council.
Got it.
Where it's going, there are two big questions that I think I know the answer to one, but I don't know the answer to the other. One is, will America ultimately get involved? And I think the answer to that is yes. They're going to wait for Israel to flatten the playing field a little bit more, do a little bit more damage. There are reports, somewhere between rumors and reports, of a large number of American air-to-air refueling tankers on their way to the Middle East, and trailing along with them all sorts of combat aircraft. The heavies, the B-2s and the B-52s, don't have to come from anywhere close. They can take off from anywhere in the world, bomb anywhere in the world, and then land anywhere in the world. Which is why there are hints leading toward later this week, Thursday and Friday. Once again, I believe that there is truth to much of that, but it's a belief. It's not based on any really hard public fact. The other question is the one we've already discussed, and that is what will the Iranian people do? And that one we're just going to have to wait and watch and see. Do they get it together and make a move? Are they waiting? Do they? Once again, as this continues, and as long as it continues, every day works to their benefit. On the other hand, in all of these things, there's an element of the game of blackjack. You're getting closer to winning right up until you lose. And if you wait too long, you can end up on the wrong side of it. So that's one that I'm watching for. We'll have to watch for and hope for the best.
Thank you, Elliot. You have to go. Thank you.
May I ask Elliot a question before he goes?
Yeah, let's do it.
Will my kids get to finish out the school year or not?
You mean they may have
go back to school?
They may have already finished off the school year.
Yeah, I guess that's what I mean. Are they going to go back at all before June 30th is always the last day of school in Israel?
Yeah, I know. I wouldn't bet on it. But a lot of that, of course, comes down to the two questions that I raised that can answer that.
Can I had a pleasure at a question too?
I have put you for Elliot as well. I've got a one word underlined over here. Would you hazard a guess? You talk about the B-52s, right? In one word. Where would you say the target is? I just want to see.
Fordo is the target.
Brother, he's coming to celebrate my birthday with you like it or not. That's it.
He said later in the week. He said later in the
week. One of them is going to fly over Netanya and drop all sorts of, confetti and stuff, tinsel.
Chris, you wanted to ask?
Yes, my Chris. Question, Elliot, can you do a Zoom with me later this evening?
Later this evening, I don't know, but later this week, yes.
Well, I'll give you a call.
All right, be in touch.
I've been called many things, but never matchmaker. Excellent. Chris, as long as you were just talking to Elliot.
Be well.
I want to come back and kind of wrap up what we're seeing about from the world's response, and then come back to kind of closing observations. Where is this going to go? Piggybacking on what Elliot said. What do you think, Chris, in terms of the world's response? Good or bad? Indifference.
My reaction to the nations in the Middle East is that they, as Eliot said, they hedge their bets. But I think they say one thing publicly and another thing privately. I think when Saudi Arabia came out pretty soon and condemning Israel, I think that's their public posture. But behind the scenes, I'm sure they're cheering on Israel to eliminate, you know, one of their mortal enemies as well, a Shiite Iran against the Sunni Saudi Arabia. The other reaction, I guess, in for some of the European countries that would sort of want a ceasefire or sort of negotiations, I think, why would in 1945 or 1944, why would you want to negotiate with Hitler? You just want to have a victory. I think Israel's got to have a victory, and I think anyone sort of equivocates on that is not the way to go right now, and they need to be cheering Israel, because we had the opportunity to interview former Prime Minister Naftali Bennett down there where Bet Yam, and he said, you know, they're doing the dirty work for the world, and that's what Israel's doing right now.
Very good. Nicole, Roline, observations from the world?
Well, no great surprise that South Africa has taken the side of Iran and condemned Israel. No great shocker there. You know, their money bags are drying up. And I did enjoy Boris Johnson in an op-ed saying that Keir Starmer has been so weak that he almost makes Neville Chamberlain look robust, which I thought was quite funny. But my disappointment has been... and it shouldn't be a shock. The international forums and countries around the world not condemning the indiscriminate strikes against Israeli civilians that have resulted in a number of fatalities and casualties and a significant amount of damage. You know, we are doing the dirty work, as Chris said, and I've actually got a breaking news just come up on my screen from Chancellor Merz, who says Israel is doing the dirty work for us all. Yeah, we are. So when our civilians are losing their lives, please show some empathy and some sympathy for those who are paying the ultimate price for your safety.
Yeah. Thank you. Nicole?
Yeah. here's what I'm looking at as we... you know, navigate the next few, I don't know if it's going to be days, weeks, or months. First of all, it's extremely hard to get the truth from Iran. There's not a free press. So you have to follow people on different social media platforms. And even then, you're not sure if you're getting the truth. You know, so it's good to find a source, like we were talking about Marzieh Amirazadeh, and to, you know what she's saying, and just find your, you know, couple of Iranians, expats who speak Farsi and would be able to interpret what they're seeing. But I think we're looking at an exodus of Iranians right now. They're fleeing to the border. Somebody asked in the chat, like, why are they evacuating Tehran? And I assume, you know, well, first of all, the IDF called, you know, for people in capital to evacuate. So probably they're going to start targeting, you know, who the leaders continue to target the leaders and other governmental sites. But as they're leaving, they're heading to Turkey, they're heading to Armenia. This is, you know, so let's see what happens, how many people are leave and what happens. So I know people there who are expecting to receive Iranians. The other thing is, what is the strategy of the external Iranian army? Because there is one. There is the IRGC, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. They have people. They have operatives all over the world. And that's how they kidnap and assassinate dissidents overseas. And they're also responsible for bombing Jewish centers and Israeli facilities. So do they have a strategy? And are they affected by what's happening? And we talk about Iran's military capabilities within their nation. That's one thing. But what about their capabilities outside the nation? I don't know the answer to that. And last but not least, talking about whether or not the people themselves are able to use this to overthrow the government. They've tried so many times, so many waves. We've all talked about it. Chris mentioned it. And, a few of you mentioned it, that they have tried and they've never gotten through. But if this would be the time that this could be the time for change. And I think that will be the icing on the cake or the cherry on the cake for what Israel's doing, because what Israel's doing without a regime change, you're still dealing with a hostile territory. But if the people overcome, or if the people can overthrow and get somebody better in power, then you will most likely have an ally, a huge, significant ally geopolitically in the region.
Right. One of the funny memes that's going around is the noting that in 46 years there haven't been direct flights between Israel and Iran, and now there have been many. So hopefully they will be able to have a friendly regime and restore the commercial flights as well. So I want to begin wrapping up just sort of a last round. First of all, George asked the question in terms of reports of Iranian leadership fleeing the country to Russia. Is there truth to it? I don't know if anyone can speak to whether there's truth or not, but the rumors are certainly flying, as are certain aircraft where the airspace in Iran is also closed. And it's assuming that they're not exporting Persian carpets and pistachios. But there's a general sense of questions also in terms of over Iranians overthrowing the current regime. Can they form a new government that's a cohesive government? So I'm just going to ask all of you, in whatever order, whoever chooses to start, really to focus on the last question. What are your predictions, whether it's the coming days, weeks, months? Where does this end? How are we going to see an end to it? And what does that mean?
Oh, I think I just accidentally may have answered that in my last spiel.
That's okay. That's okay.
So go ahead, guys. Sorry.
Larry, you were going to speak?
Yeah. I'm going to start off with a troubling statement that I heard Israel Katz, our defense minister, say just before I came on air. And he said, and I quote, "We are not doing it to bring down the regime in Iran. We're doing it to remove the threat we are facing." Now, that raised several questions in my mind. Why would Israel Katz, of all people, say, "We're not doing this to bring down the regime in Iran"? That seems to me that he perhaps got a message from Bibi, who got a message from President Trump. And it brings me on to where we're heading. How is this going to end? And I can't believe it's going to end by Trump showing his muscle by bringing B-52s in order to flatten Ordo. I can't believe it, because surely Trump's policy will be to leave the regime in place. So what has it been all about? And I leave this conversation with this horrible thought spinning in my head.
Well, I'm glad that you're not the last of the panelists to speak, because that is a horrible thought, at least from my perspective. And I will just comment as an Israeli that our Minister of Defense, Israel Katz, has been making a lot of ridiculous comments recently, including threatening Iranian people, which should never have ever been said and isn't appropriate and isn't a goal of this operation. So I kind of hope that he's just being an idiot, but maybe he is taking a cue from the prime minister. Rolene, Chris, do either of you want to make a last kind of observation about where this is going?
Sure. Rolene, go ahead.
Thank you, Chris. I love your voice, by the way. I think it's just amazing. just to the point of, and I'm going to play devil's advocate, just to the point of not overthrowing the regime, I don't think whether it's a stated goal or unstated goal, any country wants to be seen as toppling the government, however loathsome it is, of another country. I think this is a very, very careful tightrope to walk, because if it's not successful, then it opens us up to another set of issues. So that's my take on that. And I don't know how this is going to end, but I know how I would like it to end. I would like it to end, obviously, with the eradication of the nuclear program and threats to state of Israel and to the world are completely eliminated. And I'd like to see it end with the signing of the Cyrus Accords between the noble Iranian people and the Jewish people, that bond that we have that goes back thousands of years. I would like to see those bonds reinstated and a pact of peace between our people. I think that they are extraordinarily brave. And if there are Iranians that are listening and wondering about their future, please know that we in the state of Israel, from an Israeli woman to my Iranian sisters who have endured so much oppression, we stand resolutely with you.
Very encouraging. Mm. Thank you. It's a good prayer. Chris?
I think Rolene's point is well taken. I don't think nations, states really like to get out there and say, we want to change or we want a regime change. So I think there is a hesitation for nations to do that, whether or not. But I think Israel Katz's statement could be moot because maybe we'll get to the, or Iran will get to the point of no return, that regardless of what, you know, anybody says one way or another, that the regime may be so damaged, so degraded, that that regime change may be inevitable. And perhaps we're getting to that point. I would just like to add, I think we are all living in historic times. I feel like we're in a hinge of history right now where the Middle East will never be the same. I think that started back Friday morning when Operation Rising Lion began. This is Israel at its finest. I can't think of a, it's just stunning and it's just inspiring to what Israel has done, planning this for 20 years or more, from thousands, tens of thousands of men and women who are preparing for this one event. And I think at the top of the heap there would be Prime Minister Netanyahu, who's made it his life's mission to make sure that Iran doesn't get a nuclear weapon. And I think we need to say the God of Israel is answering prayers. The fact that there are so little casualties in the military and tragically here in Israel, but could have been far worse. So I think the people praying around the world have had an impact. The people, and just mention this, we've been reporting on the underground church in Iran, and don't underestimate the power that they have of changing the country by changing individuals through a faith in the God of Israel. So I think we're living in miraculous times, and we have, it's a privilege to be here for such a time as this, to report on it, to see it, to be going through everything that Israel is going through.
You know, thank you for that, Chris. You know, I gave an interview with Perry Atkinson yesterday, and I was making an observation in terms of Jeremiah 49, the prophecies written in verse 35 to 39. Not only that God is going to destroy the might of Elam, which is modern Iran, but he says he's going to set up his throne there. And I don't know this. I haven't checked it, but I love anyone here who's listening, following, or anyone who knows better than I do, most prophecies that we read about relate to the Jewish people in the land of Israel, and now in the restored state of Israel. Elam is very specific. It's a very specific prophecy in a very specific place. And when you talk about the underground church, it's not only seeing a potential spiritual change in Iran, but actually the fulfillment of God establishing his throne there. Really remarkable.
Yeah. Yeah, and I would just add to Rolene's point about Cyrus Accords.
Yeah.
That is the hope, the prayers of so many. For thousands of years, Israel and Persia have been as one or linked together, and now the prayer is that they could be once again reunited.
Nicole, thank you. Nicole, you answered it before, but before I close it and invite Arlene Samuels to make some closing comments and close with prayer, is there anything now that you would add to just where we need to go and what you would like to see?
All amazing, amazing points here, Rolene, and You know, what you were just saying. Also, Chris, what you just said, and just bring it all back to the underground church and everything. I am praying that also the wider geopolitical repercussions that go on. I'm not even talking about Saudi Arabia and Israel, but like what will happen with Armenia and Azerbaijan. That's also a concern. I know maybe less on the pro-Israel, you know, that the Israel spectrum. But, you know, for me, it's also a concern what happens to the Christian nation of Armenia that is up there, which had been ironically protected by Iran all of this time. So anyway, that would be the last concern that I would throw out. But I think we're also just in historic and biblical times. And so I'm watching to see where this goes.
Amazing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all. Barry, Chris, Nicole, and Rolene, and Elliot, who's already had to go. With that, I want to invite my good friend Arlene Samuels, also a wonderful, connected to CBN with a weekly column that's widely, widely circulated and clicked on more than I have children and grandchildren. And to come on and just share any closing observations from Atlanta, but also, and by the way, thank you for being here, but and for being that potential understudy. Fortunately, the big thing didn't happen with having to knock us all out to go to the bomb shelters, but thank you for being here and sitting graciously. And then if you would just close us in prayer before I finish with the announcements. We just need you to unmute.
Thank you all so much. I've thoroughly enjoyed listening to each of you. And I'm comporting with some comments that Chris made in terms of we are all sitting on the front row of world history and biblical history. And I think it's just astonishing that we are living at this time. And certainly my perspective, along with all of you on the panel, is that God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, is keeping His eternal promises. All of us here, we're active in supporting Israel, in supporting, you know, our countries. But we know that Israel is in the eternal hands of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And one of my final thoughts is that, you know, David defeated Goliath with five smooth stones. So 3,000 years later, we have Israel empowered as a superpower to oppose the terror superpower in this world today.
Yes.
So that's so encouraging, I know, to all of us here and all of our listeners. And again, just mentioning Marzi's name, I'm writing another article this week that does include her, and she's a dear friend. And Marzi has mentioned Reza Pahlavi, the crown prince, as someone she has a good bit of respect for. And I'm just wondering if he might have a place in the future of Iran. So let us close in a prayer. And I'm so grateful to be part of our Jewish and Christian relationships for such a time as this. So, God, we pray to you today as the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. For those of us who are Christians, we thank you that we are grafted in. We thank you that we are part of the olive tree, and you have made provision for those of us who are non-Jews as well. Mm. God, we continue to look to you for your will on earth regarding your people and this entire world. Thank you that we can count on you as a trustworthy God. I pray for safety for everyone on this panel, their families, all who live in Israel. I have friends who have traveled to Israel who are there now unexpectedly. God, we ask that you encourage everyone listening to this podcast and viewing it, that they will sense your true shalom, and thanking you, I personally thank you for the resilience and endurance that our Jewish friends and the nation of Israel is showing to the rest of this world, whether they recognize it or not, we do. Thank you. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Arlene. You know, there's a lot that we covered, a huge amount, and I want to thank you all. There's a huge amount we didn't cover, and probably by the time this is broadcast and available for people to watch and replay, we will have yet new updates. So people should continue to stay tuned and follow. But I wanted to thank everybody again for participating. As we've always done for years now, the Genesis 123 Foundation concludes its webinars and podcasts with a special offer. We call it each month, we call it a gift from Jonathan's bookshelf. And for the last close to 2 years, not quite, we've offered a free gift, the magnificent book that we've published, in which Chris Mitchell is one of 75 authors, called Israel the Miracle. It's a stunning book. You can look at it at israelthemiracle.com. But all we ask that you do is follow, like, or comment on the link to this broadcast, and we pick one person a month to receive a copy of Israel the Miracle on us, $75 value. So please do. We always are grateful to our friends at the Willow Run Greenhouse in Culpeper, Virginia, for being sponsors of this program, and to our friends, the Coyne family, for their meaningful friendship and sponsorship as well. Inspiration from Zion is a program of the Genesis 123 Foundation, and all of our programs are made possible by donations. So please continue to donate to make meaningful conversations like this happen and continue to build bridges. This episode as host is in honor of the brave Iranian people and the brave fighters and leaders of the State of Israel, who hopefully, as we've mentioned, will be able to unify more than virtually in the coming weeks, months, and certainly years ahead, and with a positive outcome. If you'd like to sponsor a future episode in memory or honor of a loved one or special occasion, or the overthrowing of your favorite Islamic regime, please be in touch at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com. We'd always love to hear your comments as part of a dialogue and invite you to send questions specifically about traditional Judaism for our Ask the Rabbi programs. Please share this with others who will also find it of interest, and continue to join us right here where we bring you more meaningful conversations about Israel that you won't hear anywhere else. Wherever you are in the world, I pray that you and your loved ones are all safe and healthy, and send my blessings from right here in the Judean Mountains. God bless you. Hallelujah.